And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, it's great to be with you today, and we're going to be discussing a subject that I believe you'll find fascinating, intriguing, and quite frightening. Hillary Rodham Clinton was asked some years ago, in the field of literature, what is the book that meant the most to your life? What is the book that has most impacted or changed your life? She mentioned two books. One of them was George Orwell's book, 1984. A novel, 1984. That book, she said, had the most impact on her thinking. I read George Orwell's book not as a young man, but actually I read it for the first time. I believe I was, about 28 years of age or so. I don't know why I hadn't read it before then, but everybody talked about 1984 and Big Brother, George Orwell. I finally said, well, I need to read that book. So I went to the library on the military base where I was stationed. I remembered at the time, stationed at Udorn Air Base, Thailand. And I went to the library and I said, do you have 1984? And the nice librarian said, well, certainly it's a classic. We have that. And I got the book and I read it overnight, read the whole book. Then I read it again. Since then, I've read the book many more times. In fact, I just read it again today. And every time I read it, I realize how powerful this book is. In a strange sort of way, it's a prophetic book. Oh, not the same as Bible prophecy by any means. It's interesting that some of the people that are really practicing Orwellian magic and really are disgraceful in that they themselves are the monsters of society. They're the ones that are going around preaching and telling us that we must guard against Big Brother. But in fact, they are all servants of Big Brother. I believe that most Americans have not read this book. I don't believe that even 1% of Americans have read this book. I don't believe in all of America today there are over 100,000 people who have read this book, but they all seem to know a little bit about it. They may not know where the term Big Brother came from, but if you said, well, George Orwell's novel, 1984, they, oh yeah, I know that. Yeah, sure, I know that, but they don't. My prayer is you will read this book for yourself. If you've read it before, read it again and read it again. As I have done, make little notes in the margins of the book. And note how the world of 2007, 2008 is exactly the way it was described in George Orwell's 1984. This was a future world. He was predicting the future, and now, well, here it is. And so today, perhaps the title, I always have a theme, as you know, or a name for a program. Today, the program is entitled Orwell's Children. Are we not children of George Orwell? In his fantastic, futuristic, prophetic novel, 1984, are we not children of that book? And is 1984, you see, it's not just that year, 1984. Some say the book was published in 1948. And George Orwell just did a spin and transposed the 8 and the 4, and it became 1984. He didn't know it exactly what year, what date this would happen, but he foresaw it. He was very, very familiar with communism because he had got wrapped up in the communist cause before he freed himself from it. He was an Englishman, of course. And part of that society that has been so permeated with socialism for so long. 1984. Many terms in this book you'll see today. Common terms, as I mentioned, Big Brother and others. I would like to go through this book with you today. And as we do, ask yourself, are we not living in 1984? Are we not Orwell's children? Is this not the Orwellian age? The thought police are all around us. The terms doublethink, newspeak, it's all here. We're going to discuss those things. Every time I turn on the television and they have another news item about Osama bin Laden, I think of 1984. Oh, Osama bin Laden is found in the pages of George Orwell's book, 1984. You say, that cannot be so. Oh, yes, it is. The Hate Crimes Act they're trying to pass now and will already pass some. It's already true in Canada and many other countries around the world. It's coming to America. It's in 1984. The control of the news media that we are experiencing in America today, it was all predicted in 1984. The book starts out with a very interesting sentence, and sometimes, not always, you can tell from the very beginning of a book what kind of book it's going to be. The minute I opened up the book 1984 and read the first sentence, I said, this is going to be a Lopalooza. This is going to be a whopper. Here's the way it starts out. The very first line of this 1984, it says, it was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Well, 13? How could that be? Don't they start over again at 12 noon and go to 12 midnight and then start the next hour at 1 a.m.? But here it is in cold print. It was a bright, cold day in April and the clocks were striking 13. Then I turned to page 2 of my edition. And by the way, this is the Signet Classic Edition. It's a small paperback, and we're going to offer it to you here in the ministry a little bit later on so you can have your own copy of 1984. You may want to order a dozen copies, give them out to your friends, because if they want to know what Big Brother neocon government is doing now, read about it. 1984, published in 1948, but true in 2007. On page 2 of my edition, you're introduced to Big Brother. Because there are posters around warning people, Big Brother is watching you. Oh, they're doing that now. On my way to work this morning, I stopped at a traffic light and I saw the camera, the video cam, watching me, taking pictures. Speed, it'll get you. Run a stoplight, it'll capture your image. And you'll be sent a notice. You've got to pay a big fine. You've been caught. Big Brother is watching us everywhere. They say the city of London now might have as many as 100,000 video cams watching people. Every corner, watching. Just go into any department store, 7-Eleven convenience store. They're watching you. The cameras ever churning, watching. That's on page 2 of 1984. On page 3 of the book 1984, it talks about the telescreen, the television. In Winston Smith is the, I don't know if you call him hero, but he's the main character of this book. And Winston Smith has, like everybody else, has a telescreen or a television. And Winston says that he watches it, but it also watches him. It knows every move he makes. Oh, yes, the video cam goes right in your home. Some people have been writing to me, and they say, why are we, by 2009, everybody must have a converter box and will have a high-definition TV, HD TV. Why is that, Tex? Oh, what do you think? You're watching it. It's watching you. They say now that there are no parts available for the old copy machines. The old copy machines were a little different. The new copy machines that you have in America, when you make a copy, it makes a permanent copy. You can never get rid of it. Your computer, there are certain websites, oh, the government doesn't want you to visit and access on the web. Well, sorry. You can't get rid of them. You say, well, I'll erase my hard drive. Uh-uh. They'll find them. I'll beat it up with a sledgehammer. I'll throw it in the lake. Well, they'll send divers down to get it if they want to. They'll bring it up. And they have recovery techniques and methods. They'll find out what you were trying to hide. Maybe the video cam will catch you in action throwing your hard drive into the lake or to the river. And they'll say, oh, there's one. He must be up to some no good. He must be anti-government. Let's go retrieve the hard drive. Let's find out what he said. The thought police will be visiting you very soon, no doubt. They did in 1984. Page 3, he talks about the thought police. And listen to what he says here, and I'm going to read right from the book, and there will be many times I'll be reading to you during this hour. He says, I could be seen as well as heard. There was, of course, no way of knowing whether you were being watched at any given moment. How often or on what system the thought police plugged in on any individual wire was guesswork. It was even conceivable that they watched everybody all the time. But at any rate, they could plug in your wire whenever they wanted to. You had to live, did live, from a habit that became instinct in the assumption that every sound you made was overheard and scrutinized. Some people, when they talk to me on the phone, say, Tex, do you think we're being tape recorded? I say, yes. Well, what do you do when you want to have private conversations? I say, well, I don't have any private conversations. What about when you and your wife or even in your intimate moments in your bedroom? Do you think you could be recorded? Yes, I do. Do you mean they might even have a video cam hidden in your air conditioning duct? Or yes. Often I tell Wanda, we've always got to tell the truth and we've got to be who we are because we're being watched. You say, Tex, you're paranoid. Oh, yes, sure. I'm paranoid. Randy Weaver may not have realized that the people who moved in next door up in Idaho were government agents. And immediately the man befriended him, his family, and for the next 2 years tried to induce him to do something to break the law. And finally he did a small thing. He made the barrel of a gun in his little shop there. He cut it off 1/8 of an inch too much. Oh, that's against the law. And there they got him. Before that, Randy Weaver lived in the state of Florida. What he didn't know was, in the house next door, was another FBI agent. They bought the house next door. You mean they paid $150,000 for a house just so they could spy on Randy Weaver and his family? Yes. What laws was he breaking? Well, none. They just wanted to watch him. Maybe he had said things he shouldn't have said. Maybe you, dear friend, have written a letter to the editor. They know about it. Ah, yes. My good friend, Dr. Gordon Ginn, wrote a letter to a newspaper in California. In his letter to the editor, he said, I think it's time we took care of ourselves in America and not give out so much foreign aid. Two FBI agents visited him. We see you wrote a letter to the editor complaining about foreign aid. We just wanted to touch base and see who you are. Wow. I had two FBI agents come to visit me some years ago. We just wanted to come and meet you. We've heard about your radio program, they said. Mr. Morris. We wanted just to come and, you know, just sort of touch base with you and find out who you are and what you're made of. Really. They have billions and billions of dollars you and I have given them to fight terrorists. They're watching Big Brother. We go on in the book, 1984. There are several ministries, just as we have bureaus and government organizations. One of them in 1984 is called the Ministry of Truth. It takes care of the media, the newspapers, and helps us to find out what's going on. Oh, yes. They had a huge building where the Ministry of Truth was housed. And Winston Smith says in the book 1984 that it was built in an enormous pyramidal structure, like a pyramid, of glittering white concrete, soaring up terrace after terrace, 300 meters into the air. And Winston, looking at the building, it was just possible to read in its white face, in elegant lettering, the three slogans of the government. Three slogans. Listen to what they are, dear friends. Because I believe these are the three slogans of our American federal government today. And now, of course, there is really no state and local government. It's all federal. The first slogan, war is peace. The second, freedom is slavery. The third, ignorance is strength. Oh, yes. That's the three slogans of the American government. First, war is peace. If you go back and you read about the history of the Defense Department in America, you will find out that it was first called the War Department. Oh, yes. America had a Secretary of War in the days of World War I of the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln would call on his Secretary of War for advice on military matters. But somehow, I forget just when, but about the time of World War II when the CIA came about and all that, we changed the name. It was no longer the War Department, but the Department of Defense. And it wasn't in the business of killing people. Why? It was in the business of enforcing the peace. And I've told you about the Air Force Base, the Strategic Air Command. There's where we had the missiles, the ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear bombs. We had, of course, the B-52 and the B-58 and later the B-2 bombers. But they said, war is not your profession, Air Force officer. Peace is your profession. And, you know, we Air Force officers used to laugh about that a little bit. I remember driving into the Strategic Air Command base, and they had a huge water tower, and they had put a slogan on it. And it says, Strategic Air Command, peace is our business. But we knew we were in the business of making war. We were in the business of killing people, millions of people, through nuclear bombs, if we were called upon. And my good friend, who was a missile officer, at any time, he and another officer deep in the silo, way underneath the earth, they each had a key. And if they turned that key at the same moment in time, the intercontinental ballistic missile would go up and, well, there was 2 million people dead. That was a grave responsibility. And my friend, when we would drive past that water tower, my fellow officer would laugh and he would say, oh, sure, peace is our profession, but war is our business. War is peace. Friends, all the time we're having to fight wars. Why? For peace. Perpetual war for perpetual peace. That's the slogan of America today. I remember a famous general several decades ago wrote a book, War is a Racket. General Smedley Butler, a general in the Marines, He said, it was only after I retired did I fully figure out that every war was worthless, was fruitless, and was only to help corporations and the money men. It was never to bring peace on earth. It was never to help the common man. It was never to help an enemy that really existed. It was only to help the money men. War, said General Butler, is a racket. War is peace. We're only fighting in Iraq to bring peace to the world. We're only killing people in Vietnam to bring peace to the world. We're only fighting in Korea. On and on it goes. We're only fighting in Haiti, in Grenada, wherever the newest battlefront is. War is peace. Second slogan, freedom is slavery. Bill Clinton said it best. He says, yes, I believe in freedom. But freedom comes with responsibility. We must have rules. There are only certain things, you see, you can say and do in this country, or you're anti-patriotic. You're against America. You're against our men and women in uniform. And to bring freedom to the world, we must bring slavery. We've got to have a police state. We've got to bring the American Patriot Act into play. We've got to have executive orders that say you can only say certain things, think certain things, do certain things. You've got to be a slave to have freedom. Some people say, Tex, that's double-mindedness. Well, of course, the Bible says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. But Satan is double-minded. Of course he is. And our whole system of government is double-minded. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. Interestingly enough, not only is there a ministry of peace in this government of George Orwell's 1984 government, but there's a ministry of plenty that's concerned with the economy. There's a ministry of truth, which concerns itself with news and entertainment, education, and the fine arts. And there is a ministry of love. That's law enforcement. They love you. When they're taking you away to the American gulag, it's only because they love you so much. Didn't Jesus say they will kill you and think that they do God's service? It's for your own good, pilgrim, comrade. The ministry of love, he said, was a really frightening one. There were no windows in it at all. Winston had never been inside the ministry of love, nor within half a kilometer of it. It was a place impossible to enter except on official business. And then only by penetrating through a maze of barbed wire entanglement, steel doors, and hidden machine gun nest. Even the streets leading up to its outer barriers were roamed by gorilla-faced guards in black uniforms armed with jointed truncheons. The Ministry of Love. They enforce law and order. It's our Department of Homeland Security. They're controlling you. They're watching you. Don't fly a plane. They'll search every inch of your body. Everything you're carrying will go through their X-ray machines. Don't try to enter the Pentagon without all of the biochips that they want you to have, or the real ID card, or some other bit of identification. They're watching you. They have video cams everywhere trained on the Pentagon. It's the new Ministry of Love, as is the Ministry of Homeland Defense, and the Department of Justice. It's interesting. They didn't seem to have the video cams operating on 9/11 when that airliner smashed into the building, into the Pentagon. They didn't get any good footage of it. Hundreds of video cams trained on the exterior walls of the Pentagon, but none of them took good, clear pictures. How fascinating. By the way, Winston Smith in the book 1984 talks about drinking a bottle of liquor. They called it Victory Gin. You see, there was always a war going on, so you're always seeking a victory. Victory seemed to be, you know, never achievable, but you were always saying, just around the corner, just another surge, that's all we need, and we'll have victory. Well, to celebrate, you could go ahead and have the victory gin. There were even victory cigarettes, they called them. Reminds me of the congressman. You see, we went into this war on Iraq. Well, France didn't support us. So congressmen and a lot of people said, well, to heck with France. Why, we won't even have French fries anymore at fast food restaurants, McDonald's and Wendy's and all of them. From now on, let's not call them French fries. Let's call them freedom fries. Oh, yes, you've got to change your language. You've got to have a new language, a new speak. And you've got to have doublethink. Page 7 of my edition talks about doublethink. I was listening to the news the other day, and they said, we cannot leave Iraq. If we do, the nation of Iraq will descend into chaos. That's doublethink. And I wanted to ask the Bush government man that was shooting this line on of doublethink on Fox News, I wanted to say, hold it now. You just said that if American troops leave Iraq, the nation will descend into chaos. What happens if we stay in Iraq? Yeah, there'll be chaos. What's going on right now? What is Iraq in today? Civil war, rebellion, terrorism, murders, bombings. I think they could call that chaos. Hello? But you know, millions of Americans go out and parrot it. Big Brother said if we leave, why, that nation will be in chaos. But it already is in chaos. Well, no, you're not listening to me. If we leave, the nation will be in chaos, but it already is chaos. You're not listening to me, Mr. Tex. I just heard Dick Cheney say it on the Larry King show. It'll descend into chaos. Double think from 1984. Then he talks about the movies. Page 8. There are so many movies like this. For example, he talked about one of the flicks, one of the films. It showed a ship full of refugees being bombed somewhere in the Mediterranean. The audience was much amused by shots of a great, huge, fat man trying to swim away with a helicopter after him. Bullet holes entered his body. The sea around him turned pink with blood. Then a lifeboat full of children with a helicopter hovering over it, and pretty soon it sunk. Dead bodies everywhere. Children's arms coming up out of the water, trying to grasp the air, sinking again. The people seem to be happy with amusement. Isn't that what we have in America today? Gore, blood, fiendishness. Hey, you want entertainment? Let's go see that movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Hey, let's go see, you know, all these movies of war and gore. In fact, you want to see it really exciting? Let's just watch TV. We're fixing to bomb Baghdad, and the government promised us shock and awe. While we're going to see huge bombs going off, it's going to be like July 4th fireworks and huge explosions throughout Baghdad, and we'll have cameras trained on it. Whoopee, hooray, death, destruction. Let's all go to the movies today. 1984. Shock and awe, and the people loved it. After all, we're bringing peace to the world. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. We'll be right back with more on Orwell's Children. You're listening to Tex Mars and Power of Prophecy. The book is 1984 by George Orwell. We want to offer you this book. Only $8. $8. Obviously, we can't make much of a profit on $8, but I want you to have this book. You've got to have the book 1984. When you do, get out a highlighter or a pencil or a pen and underline all the areas in the book that are just like what's going on today. 1984 by George Orwell. We have plenty of copies of this book. Again, just $8. Please add $4 shipping and handling. Ask for 1984. George Orwell's 1984. And we'll get it right out to you in the mail. Now, our address here is Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. You can phone us to order the book, 1984. Our phone number, toll-free, is 1-800-234-9673. That works in Canada and the United States. Overseas, call us at our regular phone number, and that is area code 512-263-9780. Now, please add $4 for shipping and handling. A total of $12 postpaid for the book by George Orwell, 1984. Now, let's return to our regular program. I'm Tex Mars. We're talking about George Orwell's 1984, and I'm proposing to you that we are Orwell's children. Now, this is, figuratively speaking, 1984. I recently reread the remarkable novel, 1984, and I was struck by the amazing parallels between what is described in this book and what is going on today. Now, one of the biggest parallels is it seems that in the book 1984, always fighting against goodness, always fighting against the nation, always fighting against freedom and democracy, was the enemy of the state. A mysterious person, an enemy of the state. And he's always got to be named, of course. Now, you know, it doesn't really matter what his name was. In the book, his name was Emmanuel Goldstein. Everybody said, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. He's leading this shadowy underground network of revolutionaries. He wants to overthrow our government. He wants to overthrow everything that's good. And they hated him. They would periodically show his face on the screen. There he is, the enemy of the people. There would be videos of him talking. Seemingly he was everywhere, but he was never caught. He can never be captured. But he was always hatching plots. He was always threatening to say, I'm going to kill more of you. I'm going to do more. My terrorists are everywhere all around you. I am Emmanuel Goldstein. We have our secret cells even in your midst, he warned. There he was, his image on screen. Why was it the police could never catch him? Oh, he was crafty. Oh, he was cunning, this Emmanuel Goldstein. Today, we have Osama bin Laden. He's somewhere. He's in Afghanistan. No, maybe he got away. Oh, he's in Pakistan. Oh, says Bush. I don't care about him. The next day, oh yes, we do care about him. The next day, it's not Osama we're after. The next day, we've got to go find him. There's a big price on his head. He just seems to always escape us. Sometimes we've been within hours of catching him, but he always gets away. What a cunning criminal. What a Satanist of a man. This Osama bin Goldstein. Or Emmanuel bin Laden. Now I'm going to read you an exact excerpt from the book 1984. And I want to ask you this question in advance. Think about it. Do you agree with me, dear friends, that George Bush, Ariel Sharon, and now Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, Dick Cheney and the boys have succeeded in pulling off an Orwellian propaganda stunt of unusual proportions? Think about the people of America. Oh, how we hate Osama bin Laden. Oh, how we hate the Al-Qaeda terrorist network that's even in our midst. Maybe they're domestic terrorists. How about these anti-government people? Tex Mars, Alex Jones, and all the others. Oh, yes. Don't listen to those conspiracy kooks, those nuts. They put out books. In 1984, Emmanuel Goldstein had a book, a conspiracy book, and people were reading it. They were trying to confiscate it, but they never were able to confiscate all the copies. It was like an underground network of Osama bin Ladenites out there passing around the book, the secret book. Sometimes people would get together and they would see Emmanuel Goldstein on the screen, and oh, how it upset them. Their teeth would begin to grind. They were so angry at him, what he had done. Let me read to you right from the book, 1984. Quote, "The next moment, a hideous grinding screech, as of some monstrous machine running without oil, burst from the big telescreen at the end of the room. It was a noise that set one's teeth on edge and bristled the hair at the back of one's neck. The hate had started. As usual, the face of Emmanuel Goldstein." Now, friends, just put in the name Osama bin Laden. "As usual, the face of Osama bin Laden, the enemy of the people, had flashed onto the screen. There were hisses here and there among the audience. The little sandy-haired woman gave a squeak of mingled fear and disgust. Osama bin Laden was the renegade and backslider who once, long ago," how long ago nobody quite remembered, "had been one of the leading figures of the party, almost on a level with Big Brother himself, and then had engaged in counter-revolutionary activities, had been condemned to death, and had mysteriously escaped and disappeared. The program of the 2 minutes hate varied from day to day, but there was none in which Osama bin Laden was not the principal figure. He was the primal traitor, the earliest defiler of the party's purity. All subsequent crimes against the party, all treacheries, acts of sabotage, heresies, deviations, sprang directly out of his teaching. Somewhere or other, Osama bin Laden was still alive and hatching his conspiracies, perhaps somewhere beyond the sea, under the protection of his foreign paymasters. Perhaps even, so it was occasionally rumored, in some hiding place in Oceania, this country itself. Winston's diaphragm was constricted. He could never see the face of Osama bin Laden without a painful mixture of emotions. It was a lean face, with a great fuzzy aureole of hair and a small goatee beard. A clever face, and yet somehow inherently despicable, with a kind of senile silliness in the long, thin nose, near the end of which a pair of spectacles was perched. It resembled the face of a sheep, and the voice, too, had a sheep-like quality. Osama bin Laden was delivering his usual venomous attack upon the doctrines of the party, the attack so exaggerated and perverse that a child should have been able to see through it, and yet just plausible enough to fill one with an alarmed feeling that other people, less level-headed than oneself, might just be taken in by it. He was abusing Big Brother government. He was denouncing the dictatorship of the party. Osama bin Laden was demanding the immediate conclusion of a peace. He was advocating freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of thought. He was crying hysterically that the revolution had been betrayed. All the while, lest one should be in any doubt as to the reality which Osama bin Laden's spacious claptrap covered, behind his head on the telescreen, there marched the endless columns of his Eurasian terrorist army. Row after row of solid-looking men with expressionless Asiatic faces, who swarmed up to the surface of the screen and vanished, only to be replaced by others, over and over, on the telescreen. The dull, rhythmic tramp of the soldiers' boots formed the background to Osama's bleeding voice. Before the hate had proceeded for 30 minutes, uncontrollable exclamations of rage were breaking out from half the people in the room. Always there were fresh dupes waiting to be seduced by Osama. A day never passed when spies and saboteurs acting under his directions were not unmasked by the thought police. He seemed to be the commander of a vast shadowy army, an underground network of conspirators dedicated to the overthrow of the state. Think about it, friends. 1984, he had a thin beard, almost a goatee, and he was always spouting lies and encouraging people to join his movement. Maybe in his hatching of conspiracies, it was said, maybe he was mysteriously hiding somewhere beyond the sea. Maybe there were foreign paymasters giving him money, you know, like the Arab Islamicist. Oh, yes. And then, friends, I was watching again this week, and they were talking about Osama bin Laden. I believe it was CBS News. And they were talking about the newest terrorist threat of the Homeland Security Department, Mr. Chertoff. And on the screen, they showed a terrorist camp. It was the same scene I'd seen a dozen, maybe 100 times. Haven't you seen it too? Turn to CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, Fox News. It doesn't matter. It's the same scene. There are these terrorist armies. They're dressed in black. And they're on some kind of an obstacle course. And they're all going over obstacle after obstacle, wave after wave of these Islamic terrorists. All dressed in black, all faces masked, over and over again. They never stop. They keep coming and coming. No matter how many you arrest and take away, no matter how many you kill, they're always there. And Osama bin Laden somewhere is hiding out. The mastermind, the director. And oh, how we do hate him. Oh, the 2 minutes of hate every day watching the news. Oh, there could be news of a slaying at a university or a school. There could be news of a hurricane or a weather problem in some area of the world. There could be news of the economy. But sooner or later, in every 30-minute news program on our television screens, just watch, there'll be news of the newest terrorist going on. Every day, fear-mongering occurs. And then we see it again. There's been a new tape found. There's been a new video found of Osama bin Laden, enemy of the state. Look at him. Don't you just hate him? And you know, one time he was a friend of America. One time, we're told he was in the employ of the CIA. He was our friend in Afghanistan fighting the communist. But today, he's our enemy. Somehow he went from being paid by the CIA and being a friend of America fighting communism. Now he is the enemy of the state. He's head of this shadowy network called Al-Qaeda. We don't really know where the headquarters is. We don't know all the leaders. Every once in a while we're told so-and-so is second in command. So-and-so is third in command. But we really don't know. Osama bin Goldstein, 1984. But wait. It's not 1984. It's 2007. The people are more educated today. They're more smart. They're up to this. They know, don't they? They're awake. They can't be fooled like Big Brother fooled people. People are so smart and educated today. Why the colleges are brimming with graduates? No, we can't be fooled by Big Brother. Well, you know, in George Orwell's 1984, they talk about the proletarians, the prole, the common man and woman. And they were interested in the same things that people today seem to be interested in. There was the Ministry of Truth. This is page 43 of my edition of 1984. It says whose primary job was to supply the citizens with lots of interesting news. Newspapers, films, textbooks, television programs, plays, novels, every conceivable kind of information, instruction, or entertainment, from a statute to a slogan, from a lyric poem to a biological treatise, from a child's spelling book to a new dictionary. All the needs of the people were met. just like today, isn't it? There was a whole chain of literature, music, drama, and entertainment. And then he describes it. Rubbishy newspapers, containing almost nothing except sports, crime, astrology, little novelette stories, films oozing with sex, sentimental songs. There was even a whole new subsection of literature called pornosec, engaging in producing pornography. It seemed as so many people were interested in it. The government had to help produce it. And it seemed that all this literature, they had names of authors on it, but they never wrote anything. It was always done by committees. You know, I found out a long time ago. I began writing Christian books, and people asked me. I would go around to Christian television stations, and they would say, "What a fabulous book Dark Secrets is. Wow, Tex, you're fantastic. Who was your ghostwriter?" I said, "Ghostwriter? Yeah, who wrote the book? We know you're the face, your name is on it, but you didn't write it." I said, "Well, yes, I wrote the book." "Huh?" And then they would clam up, they would shut up. You see, I never was part of the establishment. I wrote this book, and it was published. My publisher said, we might be lucky to sell 5,000 copies. I think it ended up selling, you know, like 400,000 or something. It was a number one bestseller. They were shocked. Everybody was shocked. I wasn't one of the picked. I wasn't one of the chosen where you have all the ghostwriters. I found out later that Chuck Colson, he doesn't write any books. Billy Graham doesn't write any books. Pat Robertson doesn't write any books. Jerry Falwell never wrote any books. Oliver North never wrote any books. Paul Crouch never writes any books. Oral Roberts never wrote any books, but they have all kind of books in their names, even number one bestsellers. They didn't write them. Nobody writes books. Lee Iacocca, former chairman of Ford Motor Company, wrote a best-selling autobiography, but he didn't write it. How can it be an autobiography if he didn't write it? Well, I'm sorry, it didn't matter. It wasn't Ford. It was Chrysler. Thank you. Tomorrow he could be head of Chrysler. I don't know. They switch around. Steve Jobs retired at Apple Computer, and the next chairman was Mr. Kendall, who had been the chairman of Pepsi-Cola. What does it matter? Ghost-written books, same thing. By the way, at the news departments, there were elaborately equipped studios, this is page 42 of 1984, where they faked photographs. And the news was ever-changing. And nobody seemed to remember the news of yesterday. Yesterday, Bush said there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but today they say it doesn't really matter. Didn't we get rid of Osama bin Laden? But wait, wasn't he the one that had the weapons of mass destruction? Well, no, but it doesn't really matter. We're there today, and if we leave, why, Iraq will descend into chaos. But what about what happened yesterday? Forget about yesterday. There's a slogan in here I think is pretty interesting. It says, in 1984, he who controls the past controls the present. He who controls the present controls the future. That was the slogan of the government in 1984. Ah, yes, we get back to one of those three slogans of the party. Ignorance is strength. They want you to be dumb. They like you to be dumb. What is the new U.S. Fear Project? Well, global warming. Shake in your boots. Chatter. Oh, I'm so scared. Global warming. Oh, Chicken Little, the sky is going to fall, but tomorrow it'll be global cooling, global freezing. It's whatever Big Brother wants. The truth for today is, in 1984, O'Brien, a torturer for the government, you see, they arrested Winston. He didn't go along with it. They arrested him. They put him in a gulag, the Ministry of Love did. They loved him. Locked him away, just like we have gulags today in Guantanamo Bay, Ethiopia, Romania, probably in about 49 or 50 countries around the world. Guantanamo Bay has been talked about. It's a terrible place. McCain even says, let's close it up. Okay, we'll keep the other 49 countries' gulags working. The American prisons, we'll close up Guantanamo Bay. It's a symbol. People don't like that symbol. We'll keep the gulag going, but we'll close one little cap. Everybody will say, isn't it wonderful? We don't have torture anymore at American gulags. We closed up Guantanamo Bay. As Winston was being tortured and tormented, the government interrogator, Mr. O'Brien, held up his fingers. He said, Winston, how many fingers am I holding up? Winston said, three. And it was three in objective truth, but nevertheless, you see, Winston had been plugged up to an electric shock machine. And the minute, the instant he said three, he received a horrible shock in his body that sent him into convulsions. The pain was grotesque and terrible. Mr. O'Brien put forth his hand again and extended the fingers. How many fingers do you see, Winston? Winston said, four. The shock came again. Horrible pain. O'Brien told Winston, he said, Winston, you must learn to tell the truth. Winston said, but I told the truth. He said, oh no, the truth is whatever Big Brother says it is. How many fingers am I holding up, Winston? And Winston knew no matter what he said, he was going to be shocked, and he screamed in pain, and he said, please, please, whatever number you want it to be, that's what it is. O'Brien said, that's very good, Winston. The shocks were discontinued. He had learned about Big Brother. What Big Brother wants from the people? Is 2 and 2 4? No. Not if Big Brother says it's 5. Not if he says it's 7 or 10 or 12. You know, friends, I opt for freedom. And isn't it a free thing to say this? If in America today we were simply free to say that 2 plus 2 equals 4, would not this whole country change? Because everywhere around us are the liars saying 2 plus 2 is 5 or 7 or 3. But if you, dear friend, as a lover of freedom and truth, say no, 2 plus 2 equals 4, you become the enemy of the state, just as Winston. Because 2 plus 2 is not 4 for Big Brother, it's whatever he says it is. If there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, there are weapons of mass destruction. If there is really an Al-Qaeda terrorist network, there is an Al-Qaeda terrorist network. And if you say there's not, well, you got a shock in store for you. If Big Brother can get his hands on you. Oh, there's so much in this book. It really is just an incredible book. In Orwell's 1984, we see that they developed a new dictionary. A new dictionary. In fact, it was edited and changed constantly. New words were improvised and old words were taken out. And newspeak appeared to be the only language in which the vocabulary got smaller every year. Friends, isn't that the way it is today? Listen to this. And on page 53 of 1984, it says, the hope is that by 2050, earlier probably, all real knowledge of old speak will have disappeared. The whole literature of the past will have been destroyed. Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, Byron, they'll exist only in the new versions. Only in the new versions. I was thinking about the King James Bible. We have new versions now. Thousands are coming out. New versions. Every day it changes. The old version of the Bible said the Jews were responsible for Jesus' crucifixion. They cried out, that is the Jews, crucify him. Today there's, in the new versions, there's no mention of the Jews. Talk to young kids that are getting the newer versions and reading them. The new teenagers who someday will be the adults, they won't know what the Bible said. It may be that Jesus never died on the cross. It might be we will soon have a new version in which before his life breath was out of him, they rescued him. Oh, yes. And it might even be that it was the Jews that ended up rescuing him. That'll probably be the NIV of 2010. The Jews rescued Jesus, and he never really died and was resurrected. That all was yesterday's myth. Now we have a new version. And words have to be inverted, have to change in new Big Brother calculations. That's why when Michael Jackson sings out, I'm bad in his songs, everybody says, well, what that means is, I'm good, I'm good. Not too long ago, I was at a little birthday party, and a young girl of about 21 was opening up her birthday gifts. And she got a gift she was particularly delighted with. And she screamed out in glee. She said, oh, sick. This is really sick. And she was smiling. Her dad turned to me and he smiled too. He said, what she really means is it's wonderful. I said to him, well, why did she use the term it's sick? He said, oh, you know, the kids turn everything around today. The language is sort of inverted. Really? What's good is sick. What's good is bad. White is black and black is white. But the Bible says, call not evil good and good evil. Double-mindedness. 1984. George Orwell, dear friends, and you and I are becoming Orwell's children. It says here, one of the people who were the bureaucrats working on the new dictionary of language told Winston, he says, the 11th edition, we're finally getting the language into its final shape. Why? It's wonderful. We're destroying words, scores of them, hundreds of them every day. The new edition will not contain a single word that will not become someday obsolete. It's a beautiful thing, he says, the destruction of words. The destruction of words. You know, I was looking at the Bible. Couldn't find the word in the New Bibles for Calvary. I've mentioned this to you before. I was up in Canada, and they had a huge church I spoke at. The Calvary Church! Because, you see, our Bible says it was on Calvary, the hill called Calvary, where Jesus died and resurrected. The pastor of the church where I was did not use the King James Bible. I said, why is your church called Calvary? He said, it's the place where Jesus died and was resurrected. I said, no, that's not so. Show it to me in your NIV Bible. You know what? He couldn't. It's been taken out. The new Bibles don't have words like saved, like justification, all the words. Why? Even the word Lucifer has been taken out. We don't even know the other name of the devil. Why? The new Bibles don't even have words like hell. I guess the devil would like that. 1984. We're Orwell's children. It's here. It's now. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. We've been examining 1984, and now it's 2007. It got here. Maybe a few years late, the prophetic future of George Orwell. Well, my friends, I pray that each week you'll tune in at the same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.